The following episode of Footy Prime the Podcast contains violence, coarse language, talking of shite, full frontal nudity, and adult scenes. Listener discretion is advised.
Oh, let's go!
Booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started.
Booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started. With Danny, Jimmy, Gregor, Andy, Jim, and JC. All we know and all we talk about is
booty, booty.
It's time to get this party started tonight.
Footy Prime, episode 1037.
This episode of Footy Prime is brought to you by cilantro. Let's throw it out.
It's a bit of a wasted herb, isn't it? Although I used it this weekend in
it's used.
Aloo gobi.
Here's the thing. That sounds great. Everybody buys cilantro and everybody uses a bit of it. Mm. And then it goes back in the plastic bag and sits in the fridge. And then you go to lift it out. You're like, I don't know if it's bad or not. It's really wet. And then at the end of the week, you're like, oh, this is like gross. And then you throw it out.
Hmm.
You see, we have the same issue with celery in our house. Tony insists on buying celery at least once a week. And by Friday, it's withered and hasn't been touched. And I throw it out every single
like
week.
Charms.
I say, why don't you use it?
Withered.
I'm withered in many ways. Do you see? By the end of the week, I'm definitely withered. But yeah, but
cheese whiz.
Hmm.
Cheese no, that
celery
usually
and cheese
good.
Whiz are spectacular.
Oh, actually, yes. Yeah. Excellent.
Spectacular.
Or no, and peanut butter, ants on a log. Mm.
Not as much.
See, I enjoy ants on a log.
I like almond butter.
It's going to be crunchy.
Isn't that with raisins, ants on a log?
Yeah.
Better than raisins?
Uh-huh.
Raisins?
The ants on the log.
That's also what I said this morning after I looked at the toilet.
Can we restart again?
Yeah, can we really? Like, Jesus, we're trying to be professional and a source for all Canada's football.
Oh, there were some ants on a log near my toilet.
Hey, Craig, one question now before we move on. You definitely dip the celery into the cheese whiz into the jar, right? You're not putting the cheese whiz into a bowl. You're going straight into that jar.
No, I was scoop it out. Because you gotta put it in the groove.
Yeah, right. But you're putting it straight into the jar, though, right?
No.
Oh, you're not? You're using a spoon to scoop it onto the actual celery?
Or a knife?
Ooh. Knife.
I'm wondering about your technique. Do you not own a pie company? What utensils plating, are you using?
Plating was never my strength.
I don't think there's any cheese in the whiz, either.
No, it's plastic.
Petroleum-based, I think, right?
Yeah, I think it actually legally is either petroleum-based or same thing, really, but
yeah.
But it's tasty as hell,
and it lasts way longer than cilantro.
And we make for a great sponsor of our very show here, brought to you by Cheese Whiz. We put the cheese in the whiz. It writes itself, doesn't it? Anyway, it's Footy Prime, and we've got a full crew here. As usual, we've got Jimmy Brennan there looking at us with nothing but disdain.
Mm-hmm.
We have Craig Forrest, as you mentioned, who likes dipping his celery into the pot. We have Dan Wong, who says terrible things before we actually start recording. We have a JC there to the left, had a great, great dinner last weekend at the Chuck's Roadhouse Grill in Fort Erie.
Oh, boy.
And we have Amy Dubs Walsh, who always brings the sun light to this show. Hey, Dubs.
Hey. Oh. What?
Shame on Dubs.
I was just ad-libbing just the way it came out.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Listen, plenty of sun in Vancouver. Probably not according to Munger, but there is plenty of sun in Vancouver after a signature performance. Well, not performance. Signature win moments against LAFC. An incredible match. Such drama. Had everything. Nine man Vancouver. Hang on. To force a shootout and then prevail and move on to the semifinals or the conference finals, as we should call it in MLS, but I like calling it semifinals. Mm-hmm. Craig, listen, this team has been doing it all year long. They've had their moments, their signature moments in the Champions Cup. They've won the Canadian Championship a bajillion times in a row now. No surprise there. But this just felt like that's the moment. That's what the fans will look back on. Perhaps this offseason as being that special moment where all kind of the luck merged, mingled well with the ability, and there you have it, a performance, a win, and a semi-final to look forward to. Fuck, I'm rambling today. I'm sorry. I got to apologize.
No, I liked it. You got better. You like dipped a little bit and you ended strong.
Did I? Thanks.
Yeah.
I'm going to sit back and let you guys take over now, though. Okay. I mean, I took my coffees this morning. Craig, talk about the game. There you go.
Oh, man. Where do you start? I mean,
beginning.
The first half was dominant by Vancouver. I thought they were spectacular all over the park, back to front. The movement, the wide play. LA just couldn't stay with them, and they deserved the 2-0 result. And I remember putting something out on social media that, you know, LA's not going to lay down, but that's a really good start. Some adjustments by LA in the second half, and then they got to be fair, they actually played very well and really dominated Vancouver, created a bunch of chances, ended up tying it, and then Sun's free kick was as good as it gets. Terrific free kick, tying it up, and then extra time. Well, was it red card and then the injury as well, which has kind of put Vancouver in a bit of a situation moving forward at the center back position, but we'll see how they deal with that. But overall, that extra time down basically with nine men, how they hung on was a wee miracle. They were just absolutely, the crowd were just hoping that they could survive to penalties and give themselves a chance. And somehow that scramble that hit the crossbar, the post, and then smashed off the crossbar within, 8 seconds? I mean, it was just incredible. Incredible. And then they go to penalty shootout, and, you know, you felt that they probably had the up on LA just because LA had missed all those opportunities to take it an extra time. So just one of the most spectacular things I've ever seen in the game and in the MLS. From an entertainment standpoint, it was brilliant. And obviously, we're cheering for Vancouver, but it had absolutely everything. And the drama, you got to have some luck, obviously. And now they set themselves up in a position where they could actually still host the final because Philadelphia losing to New York FC. So good signs for Vancouver, and may at long last.
And we're all supporting Minnesota tonight, right?
Yeah.
Minnesota win.
Let's hope that Dane Sinclair can stand on his head again.
Yeah. But then we got another game in Vancouver, right?
Yeah. That'll be interesting, eh? Dane Sinclair going to Vancouver, probably not getting the support that he would do next summer when they're playing in Vancouver and he's playing for Canada.
Yeah. Still, they've got to beat San Diego first.
They still got to be San Diego. Now it's going to be a big
problem. Well, yeah, that's a great line, though. That narrative
San
will get
Diego.
San Diego, yes. San Diego. But Dubs, I mean, from a purist standpoint,
yeah,
it probably wasn't one for the purists, but just for anyone that just loves football and loves theater, it delivered.
Well, it had everything. So, I mean, I would argue that, yes, it was one for the purists because the first half was all Vancouver. It looked like they were going to run away with it, but you knew that LAFC and Trendelo kind of staring down the barrel at the end of his time with LAFC. There's 45 minutes left and they made the necessary changes and they came out of the gates just flying in the second half. And then the field was tilted towards Takaoka. How come nobody can pronounce his name, by the way? Wong, are you on? No, but Wonger on the podcast on Thursday, great pods, by the way, with Colin Miller and Asa Rahman, friend of the pod and contributor. And also you guys had a great interview with Ryan Gault. So anybody who hasn't checked that out, go back and listen. But I think Wonger called him Takaoka. I think the guys for MLS season pass also had, anyway, it just, and I double checked.
I'm a racist.
Maybe I've been saying it wrong, right? Like maybe there's like a nuance to it that you're supposed to pronounce like the middle part of his name with an I, but no, I checked Dwight Capp's site. It's Takaoka. Like it's pretty straightforward.
I spelled it wrong on a tweet during the match, which the supporters club called me out. Holy. On. Yeah.
Slash Kerry Ryan. Right.
Yeah. Slash Kerry Ryan. Thanks, Kerry. Yeah.
But how about that? How about that pass from Takaoka to open the scoring? Just brilliant. So it's the ref that drops it to him, right? It's like the restart. Yeah. Like his distribution, Asa Ramon's talked about it. Craig Forrest has talked about it. We've talked about it on this podcast, how he's like an extra outfield player. He's just brilliant in distribution and the way that he reads the game as well, right? Because LAFC were quite high there, but they weren't sending anybody to ball. And then he like fakes like he's going to play it out on the left, and then he just gives himself a little bit of space and then launches that pass, and then the movement from White to create the space to draw the defender out, and then the excellent movement from Sabby to get in behind. But as I said, first half all Vancouver, second half all LAFC. And then Forrest, I wanted to talk about, you know, what you were saying with the game of just like hanging on, and then that shot from Bouanga that smashes off the post. And obviously there was more to it, and more drama and more theater. But it was, I think, the waves, and I rewatched it. I didn't get a chance to see it live. I watched it yesterday, and then I finished it this morning because I was obviously went into extra time. And the way that Vancouver hung on, it was the belief in that community, in the stands, in the club, and everything that they've accomplished over the course of this year. You need a little bit of luck sometimes. So it was like seeing that chance, seeing them miss some sitters that LAFC have buried against Vancouver, but also this year. And then it just didn't happen. And so then like the swell and like the chance, the energy, the buzz in the stadium just seemed to shift after they hung on. And then to see Sun, who was masterful on that free kick, to just break the hearts of those fans and everybody watching, thinking, oh, here we go again. Food poisoning in CCC. We're going to get, we can't slay the dragon. We can't get past LAFC. And then the penalties start and Sun smashes it off the post. Like, I don't think he could have hit it any cleaner than he did. And you're thinking, oh, hang on a minute. Maybe for once now, like for a team that's done so well, performed so well, been so dominant, that they're able to weather the storm and that little bit of luck is finally on their side. So I know they're going to be in tough, especially missing that personnel at the back. Prizo's done so well, right? But like, what does Sorensen have up his sleeve? Does he have somebody who's going to be able to fill in for the injuries and then missing Blackman? But all of a sudden they can maybe do it because they got it over the line against LAFC.
I mean, touching on Takaoka, that, I don't think I've seen somebody that comfortable with a ball and with the range that he has.
Yeah.
Since like somebody like Ederson at Man City.
That's what it reminded me of. Ederson.
Right? Like there's very few goalkeepers can ping a ball like that on a run and get somebody in behind and get an assist. I mean, Ederson has done it several times. Remember that with Aguero and whatnot. But
right
foot, left foot, both excellent. You know, and Ace actually, on the podcast last week, nailed it. He was just talking about his distribution and how good he is on it. And it just, he didn't disappoint at all. That was a spectacular goal.
Well, they were saying, the podcast, Colin was saying how he could play in the outfield if he wanted to. He's that good. They see him at training. Mm-hmm. That being said, he
did better than Colin.
Where to put him? Oh, former teammate to former teammate, Bantz. Love it.
Yeah. Colin's nickname was Scud. Remember the Scud missiles?
Yes. In the first
they would launch some, but they would have no idea where they landed.
Yeah, they kind of point in the general direction.
Was Colin. Scud.
That's great. Terrible. A bit like my intro.
Today. Better than you think. Re-listen.
Okay.
I thought you were going to throw a self-deprecating Tony in your sex life conversation.
Right. No. Yeah, right.
Total. Don't know where you're going.
at least it launches, I guess.
Yeah.
Once in a while.
But I mean, he did miss it a few in the second half, right? It was a game of two halves in that regard, Jimmy. And I saw a stat, I think, in the added time. It was extra time. It was, I think, 83% possession for LAFC, which is enormous. It just shows that resilience, right, of that Vancouver team. You mentioned injuries, but all year long they've struggled with injury. Well, not struggled. They've had injuries.
Yeah.
But they've managed to get results, Jimmy. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's a mindset on that team that might be enough this year to push them to the promised land.
I think so. I mean, even the commentators said one of these two teams are likely to win the MLS Cup. They're just such good squads and teams, the way that they both play football. And then, look, when you're in that match there and you're up 2-0, and the Vancouver players be having it in their head as well, thinking it's not going to be all rosy here because LAFC have got such quality, they're going to end up coming at us at some point. You know, the tides have got to turn in a match. We've all been there where you're thinking, okay, 2-0 up, but Something's going to happen here, and they're going to end up coming out at us. They're going to be on the front foot because we're protecting the lead. You tend to drop a little bit And they just dealt with wave after wave after wave of attacks. And it just showed the resilience and, you know, just the camaraderie between them all, just to dig in and defend the way that they did. Yeah, you know, they were a bit lucky at times. Obviously, a ball hitting the post and, you know, some great saves and throwing their bodies on the line to block shots. And in the end, I felt that they deserved it. And I think part of it, you've got to give credit to the fans as well. 50-odd thousand people behind the Whitecaps. You know, that's where you're in that moment. You're looking around the stadium and saying, you know, this isn't just about us. This is about these fans that are here, this city. And to get the result that they did was absolutely brilliant for me. You know, one player that I really love is Berhalter, and I think he doesn't get a lot of credit that he deserves. I think he's one of the best players in the league by far. Because week in and week out, this guy performs. And if I was the manager somewhere, he'd be one of the first players I'd be going after trying to get. Yeah. He's the heartbeat of that club.
The passion he was showing on the pitch. You could just feel it, couldn't you?
He's unbelievable. Look, if he was Argentinian, that guy'd be worth an absolute fortune.
Yeah, his delivery is just frightening. Like, every single time. He just does not miss hit for set pieces. Wow. And Kubis was fantastic too. Box to box.
Just
different class.
The way he sees a game, you know, I watch him a lot and I like to watch certain players just off the ball and what they do. And you can see constantly he's just reading the game. He knows where to go. He knows how to close down. He marks the space. And I think he's a brilliant, brilliant player. Really is. Love it.
So they're almost there. I mean, listen, we can't preview anything at this point because there's a match tonight, obviously. But every time that they're asked a question of them, they answer it, don't they? It seems this season. Yeah. There's a vibe around that team. And we haven't even mentioned Thomas Muller. You know, they can do it without him when he's not at his best. Right? Proven. Right. And incredible. Ali Ahmed was great again, I thought, before being subbed off for Jaden Nelson, a little Canadian action there. Jaden comes on, scores a penalty. So
the best penalty of the lot.
Oh my god! Keep that in the toolbox for the World Cup, please, Jaden.
It's like amazing.
That's how you score a penalty, right?
Yeah,
you just roof it with as much power as possible. No chance for a keeper.
You're talking about Muller, but for me, I think the work that he done off the ball was incredible. It was incredible. He was backtracking. He was defending. And, you know, when you look at a player like that, you think, oh, he's going to just sit up top and wait till he gets his opportunity. But the work that he done, he was doing the dirty side of the game in that match against LAFC.
Yeah.
And you got to give him credit for that.
And the way that he sniffs out the vulnerabilities as well, like the way that Ahmed was running at Porteous and Palencia in the first half, like they were just struggling. They did not have an answer for Ali. And then you just saw Muller like float over into that half space on the left as well. And the way that he connects and has an understanding with Berhalter, like that is dangerous. And also the way he leads the line, like the way he's doing the work off the ball, as you're mentioning, but like kind of he's constantly pointing and like getting guys together, sending White like on the triggers, on the press. And obviously the second half was a different story, but still doing all of the grunt work and the ground cover and everything that he needed to do when they were badly overrun, especially in that second half. But they were just brilliant in that first half.
He's so positive as well, isn't he? Like you just see him constantly talking to his players, giving them high fives, arms around the shoulder. You love this.
He's amazing.
He's just brilliant. What a great human that guy is.
They took out Ali Ahmed, and I'm just wondering how managers think or what's going on the pitch at the time. 20 minutes left in the match. I think Ali Ahmed came out at like 72, 73 minutes around there. But there were substitutes. Are you ever considering penalties at that point with 40 minutes? Like it means you have to go through 17 minutes of final play, extra time added on. Then like your 30 minutes playoff and then penalty kicks. Are you thinking that far ahead because I think they were 2-1 up at that point. So are you ever thinking about penalties at that point, or is it let's get to the 90 plus extra time and then we're done? Because I was just thinking it seemed like there were less and less options for you know, that I have no idea if Jaden Nelson was on the top five list, but then there's certain people that are out of the game that move him up. So I'm just wondering, do you ever think about penalties? 30 minutes, 40 minutes left in the game?
I'm sure Vancouver were, when they went into extra time, they were thinking, absolutely, this is where we want to be.
Yeah, but that's an extra time. My point is, you know, you're substituting Ali Ahmed, who's had a pretty strong game. Do you ever think about it then? Or are you just getting to the finish line?
I don't think so. I mean, I think the substitutions were quite aggressive and didn't want to stop doing what they do best, and that is get forward. I think that they were going at that point to win the game and hold on. I don't think they were thinking about penalties at that time.
Yeah, you're going to win the game. You're trying to get something out of it in 90 minutes. The only reason why you're taking Ahmed off is because, you know, fatigue was setting in. He worked his ass off, and you need fresh legs.
Mm. Like Nelson, his legs, right? Yeah,
you're exactly. Not thinking about penalties at all. You're thinking, we got to win this in 90 if we can.
Mm. Yeah. You do see it in extra time. You might see it.
Yeah.
Right.
But I don't think in a 70th minute at all.
No. I mean,
extra time when you've got a man down and then plus a player sent off, then you're thinking, get us in the penalties. Just get us to penalties because we'll have a chance here.
Yeah.
Yeah, nine against 11 is really difficult. Really difficult to hold on.
That's why you bring on Jaden Nelson's anything, like he's all legs, his energy, his work rate, right? It's fantastic. Yeah. And Ali, so is Ali, but he's probably knackered by that point.
Yeah.
Hence, I mean, it's funny you guys talk about it here all the time, you know, you up a couple of goals and naturally you begin to sit back a little bit. And as fans, you watch this and it just drives us crazy. Like, why? It was working. As footballers, like, tell me, get Dubs, take me inside your head. You're up 2-0. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not always a coach's direction. Okay, sit back a little bit. You just naturally do. That's, you see it over and over again. Why is it? Why are you all so stupid?
It's human nature. Like, as much as you don't want to take your foot off the gas, it tends to be what happens. And I think, as Forrest just alluded to, they're so progressive. They're so aggressive going forward. It's just kind of built into their DNA, into their identity, the way that they attack. And especially the transformation that has happened within this group, which is very much the same as the group that was under Vanni Sartini. I mean, obviously you get the addition of Thomas Muller later on in the year. But this is a team that understands very much how to attack and how to be front-footed. They do that naturally. But I mean, it's talked about all the time, like that lead, that dreaded lead. It's obviously you want to be up by two goals. They're not going to take the Laborda goal back like just before halftime, just because you don't want to be up 2-0, right? But I mean, you have it happens right before the halftime whistle. Tarundolo makes some adjustments. They make some tactical tweaks, and as I don't know if it was Forrest or Jimmy who said it, like you know that. I think I heard the commentator, I'm being very critical right now, but in the opening when he's looking at the 11 and he's talking about, I think he's meaning to say the two-headed monster, and in his head he might have double-edged sword, and he called it the two-headed sword. And I was like, what?
So what's a wicked sword though, isn't it?
What? What's that now? I know. It's like something in Ninja Gaiden, but anyway. Yeah, totally. Yeah, but I mean, that's what, like with Buonga and Sun, like if there's an inevitability about that attack. And I mean, obviously, Vancouver was going to have to weather that. But yes, like to go back to your question, there is a little bit of unintended complacency that can set into your game. And I don't know if they were guilty of that as much as LAFC just felt a sense of urgency that we got to get things fucking going here or our season's going to be done. Yeah. So Vancouver isn't in control of that. Right. So I think you have to give credit where credit is due. And LAFC finally, after being absolutely overrun in the first half, and Vancouver were so good, they were so compact in their shape. I talked about Thomas Muller and how he was directing, but they were so knitted together with their team parts, and their counter press was just suffocating. So whether they were intercepting balls or they were all over the ball carrier for LAFC, they didn't give them any time at all on the ball, and LAFC were poor when they did have a little bit of a spell of possession. They were unable to connect because that pressure was coming and they weren't responding to it very well.
When you're 2-0 down as well, what ends up happening is you start taking risks now because you got nothing to lose. So you start throwing numbers forward You start playing a little bit more direct. You start whipping balls into the box. So that's how you end up defending. That's when you find yourself in that situation. You know what's going to end up happening. And that's where the tide changed, was once LA started doing that thing. And, okay, now we have to be on the front foot here. We have to overload certain areas. We got to push forward, be a little bit more direct. And then that's when they start taking risks, especially in that second half, because they know they have to get forward. Whereas when the game is playing out, it's completely different because you're kind of respecting the opponent, the tactics come to play. Mm-hmm. You're not taking the risks that you do when you're 2-0 down. And I've always said it's easy to play football when you're 2-0 down because you got nothing to lose. So you're naturally on the front foot trying to get forward. So you don't play the same as you would if it was 0-0. They wouldn't have played that style or the way that they did.
It all makes complete sense now. Thank you. I will still despise and hate England or Canada when they start defending 1-0 leads or 2-0 leads, or my perception they're defending it, even though now I know different. Well articulated, all of you.
Was there a sour grapes, do you think? Yeah, there is the quotes from Lloris and Turandolo after the fact. He said, "We'll wake up tomorrow morning." And Lloris talking about the surface, and then Turandolo talking about, you know, we'll wake up tomorrow morning, speaking about, you know, late Saturday night right after the game, and then like the Sunday morning, and it's very much Vancouver didn't win this game, LAFC lost the game. Like, get over yourself.
You're up
2-0.
Like,
yeah.
Come on.
Yeah.
You're up 2-0 after 45 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
classy way to go out is he's leaving now. He's a fantastic coach. Seems like a good dude, but emotion makes you say silly things sometimes.
Is Lloris saying the field's not good, other than it just being a buried headline at the bottom if they won? He's just like, oh, I'm not crazy about this turf. In a French accent, obviously.
I'm not crazy about this turf.
Hey, this turf is not good there.
It's a different
thing. After he left the second goal in, just staring at the turf, it's a turf fault.
Yeah.
But he, like, I, you know, it was such a magnificent game, even for him. He made that great save against Tristan Blackman, made himself big on the opposite. Like, he made some great saves too. So I can understand him getting nitpicky about the turf. But my only comment about Jaden Nelson scoring that penalty kick, he was like Gwen Stefani. He left no doubt.
Wow.
I really hope you haven't workshopped that for very long because that wasn't worth it.
Hey, Wonger, don't speak.
Oh, nice.
I will say about Lloris on a second goal, the header that he conceded. Somebody of his quality, I don't care what surface is on, he's got to hold that. He's got to hold the initial header.
Yeah,
and the great save he made off Blackman, you could argue that he should have come for it.
Ooh,
I mean when he volleys it, he's only 3 yards out. I mean, it's a good ball again, but you could argue that he could have come up. He only had to move 2-3 yards at the most.
Yeah. I read a comment in our YouTube comment section, and it said,
"You almost said YT, didn't you?"
Well, I did. But it said Wonger doesn't know anything about football. And so you are correcting me. Thank you. I know nothing about football. So you're right. Thank you. I said Lloris saved the game, but he actually didn't. He screwed up.
Sax, you know that header? It wasn't really powerful, was it? I mean, watching that, I was like, he could have saved it.
Yeah, I just expected him to corral that in,
yeah,
as opposed to, I mean, he did push it wide at least, and then it was a tough angle, went through his legs, the rebound, but I think he should hold on to that.
And a header wasn't the turf's fault.
It wasn't what?
The turf's
fault.
Right. Yeah, well, it's a perfect bounce. You know what you're going to get.
Right.
Hey, we know that surface isn't ideal.
It's like, terrible.
Yeah.
Terrible. It's not great.
They know,
but that's not the excuse. There was some terrific football played over that whole game. There's some magnificent stuff that you can't blame the turf for that. I thought they were excellent. Both sides.
There's been no movement or updates on the stadium. with Vancouver, right? I know it's all ownership and sale, we're kind of tied in together, but I mean, this team is so good. You want to see them playing on a proper pitch, don't you? Let's be honest. But at this point, who cares? They're into the semifinals.
Good players can play on anything. Yeah. Mueller's done okay. He hasn't complained.
He hasn't, has he?
Not a bad player.
Do you think he complains about anything? I guess if he did complain, you'd listen, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. He wields. See, when they won, someone brought this attention to me on Twitter. Everyone runs in the field, you know, to celebrate the win. And he stops and goes back to Harbony. He's injured his fallen teammate who can't celebrate. He's in a chair and goes straight to him first, gives him a hug, a little chat, a little whisper in the ear. And then goes off to celebrate with a fist pump. And like the look in his face is like, we haven't won anything yet, boys. But we're on the way.
The guy's a legend. He doesn't put a step wrong. And even when he's talking about the match, he's like, I wasn't my best. I got pulled apart. There is certain things that I could have done better. We could have done better as a unit. You know, he's completely honest and about his assessment. And yeah.
Brilliant.
Beautiful, beautiful game.
You'll take on the winner of Minnesota and San Diego, which goes this evening. New York beat Philly. Surprise there. Mm-hmm. And Miami smashed Cincy 4-0.
Dismantled.
Messi with a goal and three assists. That last assist, the outside of the foot. Mm-hmm. Oh, my God. I had such filthy thoughts about it.
Sublime.
All night long.
Suarez didn't start, did he?
What's that, Craig?
Suarez. I think he didn't start.
No. This, what's the name? It's the kid, 19-year-old, scored the first goal. Lovely finish. Great finishes, actually.
Yeah.
Just Miami's the one to watch out for, right? They really are. And it's no surprise there. That's not, you know, great insight or analysis.
Yes.
But they blew it last year. And Messi just is willing this team, it seems, at this point. So,
it's you'll lose and get a spit in the face by Suarez at the end of it.
Yeah.
Like it's.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't believe Suarez is still playing, like that he's available. That's ridiculous.
Yeah.
Second.
Any spitter. Thoughts on any other thoughts on by the way, Messi swung a header. You don't see it very often, do you?
No. That was the opener, right?
Yeah. First goal. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Wasn't defended very well, but no one's expecting Messi to be there, I don't think. Kind of crazy.
He scored some good headers in his over his career, but probably not the highlights, I guess.
No. When you score that many goals, though, I mean, you're going to score some headers, I suppose, but he's not known for it.
Yeah.
He's probably scored like some massive Champions League winning goal with his head. And someone's going to remind us that we know nothing about soccer. Mm. But
so my memory is normally the same height as when we chest the ball.
Yeah. Because you're small, right? Any other thoughts on MLS before we move on?
The last one was Gregor and I stayed up to watch the end of the match. East Coast, West Coast. I have to say, though, it's like having a night out when you stay up that late. I just got back to normal. Yesterday, I was sleepy as hell. I slept 2 hours.
It was 9:30 kickoff too. It was an hour earlier than usual.
Oh my God, they're killing me. They're killing me. It wasn't even 9:30. I was on Apple at 9:30. Then they had chat. Yeah, and then all of a sudden at 9:45 they kick off. I'm like, all right, enough.
Talking to Kaylin on Twitter saying, you know, you got to come up here for an in-studio appearance. And she goes, well, let's find a budget for me to travel. It's like, you work for Apple. I think there's probably a budget.
Yeah.
Anyway,
former white cap herself, though, right? So that's personal fantastic. For her.
Yeah, no, yeah. We should, you know, we'll cover that a lot this week. We'll get Asa back on for sure. We're going to put the pressure on the caps again, who always come through for us with the guest as well.
Ryan Gold was Thomas. Super, super sweet man, yes. Ryan Gold.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Good to see him score from the spot as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. Happy for that. Okay, so moving on from MLS to CPL. On Friday with Valor shutting up shop. And it's been rather a tempestuous weekend with some comments thrown towards the ownership of Valor. Yeah, ugly situation, Craig. Really? You never want to see a team fold. It's been rumored for a long time. Just no one came out to see the games the last little while. And
yeah,
I know Rob Gale, who coached there first 3 years. We know Gailey, great guy. Was very, very, I'll say guarded. He wasn't guarded. He went at the ownership saying they just never backed the team, never couldn't succeed. We were always, you know, below the floor on salaries. All pretty nasty in the end. And you really feel so bad for the people involved at that club and the fan base out there. Because there are, you know, okay, there weren't many people at the stadium watching the games, but there were a loyal group who were always there. And they loved their team, right? And now that community has lost the reason for its existence.
Ooh, that's tough.
Yeah, yeah, it is tough. I think we'd be lying to ourselves if we didn't see it coming, though. Like, and go back to the point where we really struggle in Canada for facilities, like proper facilities for CPL, NSL, like just soccer-specific stadiums that can, you know, have a good little atmosphere. And that's a massive part of it in an area where it's about more than just the game. You know, it's about the community and getting together and going to bars and going to the game and back and forth. And it just, that stadium in Winnipeg is just not conducive for CPL. And even if you put 8,000 in there, it's still not going to look good. And it doesn't look good on TV. And that's important for it to look good on TV. You look at a lot of the facilities we have, they're playing out York Lionswood Stadium. I mean, on TV, it looks terrible. The camera's looking at some trees and an empty space on the other side. It has to look attractive. And it's been very difficult for these leagues to do that with the facilities that we have. I don't know what the answer is because I don't see any, there's no public money going to help out. And I'm not sure there's anybody in the private sector that's willing to fork out millions and millions of dollars to make that happen at this moment.
Well, Quebec joins the fold the next season, which is huge, obviously.
Joins the fold? Is that what you said? Joins the fold?
Oh.
Joins
the fold? No, joins the fold.
Joins to fold?
Joins to only then fold. Get it?
Oh, yeah. Oh, and yeah, that's an awful thing to say.
Oh, God. Jeez. Not hitting today. I just keep throwing them out.
No, you're not. You're freaking waste, Stefani.
Well, you're having a stinker today.
Well, you know, someone
still tired.
Bring on the kid.
Stayed up late for that Whitecaps match.
That's what it is. Your brain's still shut down from that 10 o'clock start on Saturday.
Would we be having this laugh? Come on now.
There's Craig and Wong are on the couch, you know, doing each other's nails while watching the late game, you know. It's
just, that's what
it feels like to me. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Dubs. Quebec's in the fold. That's good news, but it's going to be an 8-team league again for next season. Yeah. But there's no getting around this. This is a bad week for the CPL coming off one of its great weeks.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I don't think it's as glass half empty as Wonger said. They're joining twofold, but I think it's tough times because when you distill it down again, it's as Forrest is saying, it's an infrastructure issue in this country. And then you can go back to the Whitecaps, and people are saying, okay, like you're able to pack 50 some odd people into BC Place for that match, and you see the support. You know that the community there has deep roots in Vancouver, but I think the same could be said throughout Canada, right? I mean, maybe the history isn't quite as long, but I think there's something there that we can build on that's foundational in this country, but you need an injection of money, whether it's from public, whether it's from government, whether it's people with deep pockets. I don't know where these people are, but like the locations and the infrastructure are key here for both CPL to thrive, but also NSL. And that's why the money, and I also saw some comments talking about NSL existing due to an injection from government, that it does not exist due to the support of the government. Now, it was announced on the day of the final, on November 15th, there is going to be that injection, close to $5 million from the government to support infrastructure around the six clubs. And that's what is so desperately needed. But the league didn't start, wasn't spearheaded as off the back of money from the government. So I think we have an issue in Canada for support of sports. You look at the last budget that was pushed through. There's very little support for sport. But I mean, something else that Rob Gale alluded to as he was very candid, you mentioned Sharms, is that when he was first named coach, when Valor started as one of the original, like the OGs of the CPL, there were 11 Manitobans on that team. And it was very much about the culture, the community, the local players, giving them a platform to succeed. Mm-hmm. And now don't have that anymore in an area of our country where you look at the pipeline, you look at the development path, very little exists for young players there, whether you're a young boy or a young girl. And so Rob Gale said after COVID, they had very little support from Winnipeg Football Club, who owned Valor, about making it about the community. So, and Rob Gale, another nugget that he revealed in that interview with CBC Manitoba, it's a great article for anybody who wants more context about Valor folding, is that he's been contacted about potentially bringing a Northern Super League team to Winnipeg. Desi Scott, who is from Winnipeg herself, has recently retired. She joined the Ottawa Rapid. What is Desi going to do next? Like, she can do anything that she wants to in the world of football if she wants to stay around Ottawa. But I mean, she talked about being that link between the national team and the Northern Super League, ensuring that it was off on the right foot. But something in her hometown is near and dear to her heart. And so if there's a chance there to bring a Northern Super League team to Winnipeg, and now that's dashed or that's hurt by the fact that Valor doesn't exist anymore, that's terrible. Like, that's catastrophic news, I think, for Central Canada and its link and its potential for that youth, the next generation, to play professional football.
Is this more than just an ownership issue there, though, do you think, in that region? Can it support a professional football team, be it men's or women's, in Manitoba? I don't know.
Not in that facility, no.
Right.
No. Well, the same thing happened with the Winnipeg Fury back in the day. Mm-hmm. Start off, and they ended up folding as well.
Yeah, they were around for 5 years, I think.
Yeah.
Where were they playing?
In Winnipeg, Sharms. But they... Yeah.
they might have played
in a stadium, or were they playing in a rink?
I think sometimes we forget that, and a lot of people do here, is that this game it's an urban sport. It's urban. You have to be in the city. You got to be downtown. You know, we soccer, you don't tailgate. You're not driving 30, 40 minutes outside the city to go play in a 30,000 seat stadium. It's, you know, soccer fans are in the city. They're in the pubs. They walk to the stadium. Like, Ottawa's got a great setup, don't they? They have all the bars and restaurants are packed before the match. Everybody walks to the game and you're in the city. And I think moving forward, you know, they've really got to put the facilities in the city, downtown. That's where they need to be. NFL, yeah, you could put it in 2 hours outside the city and people go and tailgate and enjoy their times, but that's not football around the world. Football around the world, you're in the city, it's urban sport.
We were also talking about, Craig was talking about how it looks on television. We do know that they switched the cameras sides in Ottawa to make sure that it looked like the way it should, top tier football in Canada. The other thing that is part of this conversation is Winnipeg Football Club is the owners of Winnipeg Blue Bombers. Mm-hmm. And what made it an opportunity and an option was probably, hey, we're going to play at Winnipeg Stadium. That's what allowed them to say, hey, we're going to take this investment on, knowing that they may not have a suitable pitch, a suitable stadium for a Canadian CPL side, that is like 8,000 to 10,000 to start, that could be flexible and get bigger, like in Halifax, where it seems like they're running in the right kind of place. Mm-hmm. These are the issues that, back to the infrastructure, that, you know, it only made it sense to this Winnipeg team wouldn't have been there had there not been a Winnipeg Football Club. Meaning that stadium was already living there. Like, that's what made it an opportunity. Other, because it was scalability that made it an opportunity. I know what Rob Gale's saying. I read all of his, he's right probably about a lot of it, but a lot of it goes back to what Sharms was asking. Can Winnipeg actually hold a team without the infrastructure?
Remember, we were talking to Colin Miller last week, and as well, he was talking because he was coaching Edmonton for several years, and talking about the ownership and how much, he says, you won't believe how much money that he invested. And yet there was very little support in Edmonton. They couldn't wait to get to the Oilers practice, and they're getting very little coverage at all. Even when some of them wanted to cover it, they just were not getting the, he says there's just a little bit in the paper or whatever. So the actual cover locally was a big part of it. And he just felt the ownership felt let down. And Colin Miller was a big part of that. And you could see it and feel it. It was just tangible that it just was not getting supported properly. So that's a part of it too.
Yeah, we're not, we're just not really a football nation at the moment, are we? And that old term comes up a lot, but we're not. It's, we like the big shiny things. MLS does well when the teams are doing well. When the touring side comes over, you know, they do pretty well. But and I'm not saying we can't get there. We've made massive steps forward, massive progress. We're getting there, you know, the World Cup next year. I'm not a half a glasses half full person. I really believe in the future of the sport in this country, but it ain't bloody easy. It's a battle. We're seeing that. The Fury, by the way, played in at the University of Manitoba.
Yeah.
5,000 capacity stadium. Yeah. Jimmy.
Okay. I mean, going back to MLS, back in the day, Columbus was the first team that actually had a soccer-specific stadium. Now you look at that, the old stadium they played in, it was like, oh, a tin box, but it was still perfect for football.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it took the rest of the league to slowly implement these soccer-specific facilities, and look where the league is now. I mean, MLS is here to stay. There's no question about that. But there was questions back in the late 90s, early 2000s, whether the league was sustainable, whether they could actually make a go of it. But the product's good. It's getting better on the pitch. They're attracting better players. And it looks good on TV. Everything about it looks good. Now, okay, exposure, we could talk about that and Apple and all these different things. But it looks really, really good and is here to stay. And those steps were taken, as well as early days in MLS. They thought the Southern States, the Hispanics would actually be the ones that supported it. And then they moved to Toronto. Remember that? It was an absolute slam dunk. Then they go to Seattle, bring Seattle in, Vancouver. And also the Northern teams were actually propping up the league and with fans that they didn't think would exist.
Yeah, remember Craig Chivas, how they failed? And they were based purely on the Mexican market. That's what.
Yeah, but I mean, how stupid is that? I mean, it doesn't matter if you're Mexican. If you don't support Chivas, you're not supporting them. It doesn't matter whether you're Mexican or not. It's like, and they just thought that they would. And they
we're going to call Toronto Manchester United. Wouldn't have worked. Actually, maybe it would have done. Maybe it would have done, but there's a lot of fans back in those days. We got a tweet. Dubsy found this. And she's happy to regale it to us. I've got no problem with the tweet, actually. Heath Gamage says, I know there are reasons, but the lack of public criticism toward Valor ownership over the years, e.g. One Soccer and the Footy Prime crew, was disappointing. Wade Miller and WFC were allowed to treat the club, the fans, and the staff like shit for years while nobody said a thing. Yeah, listen, I've got no problem with that. You know, we are not journalists, per se. We cover the CPL to a certain degree. We'd love to cover them more. Mm-hmm. There's reasons why we don't. But I don't think you can blame the media for exposing the ownership here. But it's a valid point. The fact of the matter is CPL doesn't get much exposure in the general media space. That will change, hopefully. And things like snowballs or what we call that thing? The ice.
I call it the Blizzard Bowl, but
the Blizzard Bowl. Okay, the Blizzard Bowl. That's your best one so far, Winger, today.
All right. Well, just like Gwen Stefani, it's my life, Sharms.
Oh my God. Christ almighty.
This shit is bananas. B-A-N-A-N-A-S.
I'm digging my hole, Dubs.
Digging my hole. Isn't that Beatles song? No, it's digging a hole, isn't it?
Mm.
You switch now. I love No Doubt. I love Gwen Stefani, just for the record. Fantastic. Very good on The Voice too, I hear. She's a judge.
Never seen it. Yeah, I just want to say that, like, as a maybe a positive thing to end this, Hector Vergara, who's the executive director of the Manitoba Soccer Associations, is also part of that CBC Manitoba article. He insists, or he believes, that the Ralph Cantafio, I think I'm pronouncing it right, soccer complex on Waverly Street could potentially serve as infrastructure that is so desperately needed, because he's like, you can't have CPL or NSL potentially in like a 30,000 spectator or person stadium, right? Because of the optics, we already talked about that. So he's like 4,000 to 10,000, right? Mm-hmm. So is there a way to upgrade that? The way, and we have an example, the Roses show up, right? As the ownership, they were the fifth team announced by Project 8, which then became the Northern Super League. And Stade Boreal was born, right? Off turf that desperately needs to be changed out there, because that's been there probably since I trained on it, maybe upgraded since, but at least since 2015. But you bring in a stadium that's got 5,000 and change. They didn't lead the league. I think that was Vancouver out in Swongard. They had the most fans show up consistently over the course of the year, but I think their average was close to 4,000, going back to the Roses. And FC Supra, which is, again, like CPL will maintain that eight-team kind of status quo, even with Valor folding, because they're added to the league now. They are kind of brought to life by the fact that everything was in place in terms of investment, in terms of ownership, all that personnel in the front office, and a vision for a team, much like Rob Gale was talking about, that is leaning heavily on the local talent. They are able to come to life and be a franchise because the Roses are sharing their infrastructure with them. And that was just born out of necessity. They create this stadium. It's not a mobile stadium, like one of these ones like out in at Wanderers Grounds, where it's shipping containers, and that needs an upgrade. But that's in the right place, as Jimmy was talking about, like around the urban areas where people flock to. They, you know, there's the pubs, there's the bars, there's everything that surrounds it. But this is out in Laval, where you have the population, you have the shuttles set up from the city, and it's there. Now you have the support with two leagues, right? That can aren't dependent on one another, but they're sharing that pitch and they're sharing the stadium. I think it is possible. You just obviously you need the investors, you need the private investment. So you need that. But I think from an infrastructure outlook and perspective, I think that it is a lot more viable than we think it is.
It's common sense, isn't it, really? Why didn't it happen from the beginning? When the CPL and NSL get together, did they try? Did they try? Were there too many egos involved? What's the reason?
I think it's highly complex, as it normally is. I think there was a reticence to be involved, where you were going to be, from the NSL's perspective or Diana's perspective, second-class citizens,
right?
You're already seeing that with, you know, you're down the line in terms of that pecking order just to make your schedule, right? Because it's CFL first, and then it's CPL, and then it might be even U Sports and universities that are come ahead of you in that order, and then NSL. Mm-hmm. But like, you kind of have to make your place a little bit. But I think to be involved, I think as we push forward and we look to make the tier one from the women's perspective, and like I know CPL likes to call themselves tier one, but like it or not, you're below the MLS Canadian franchises. But we need to create space for those two entities within the sporting landscape in Canada. And so you have to work in lockstep. You have to, right? Otherwise, you have, you know, people who are casualties. Or collateral damage, like Valor, unfortunately, and all the good people who are involved with that club and all the supporters groups.
So the ideal stadium for CPL, for NSL, is, like I said, 4,000 to 10,000 in an urban area, because they have those stadiums, but they're not always in urban areas. Look at York, for example. Stadium itself would be fine if there was stuff around it and the fans were prepared to travel. Mm-hmm. Now, this Thursday, there's an event held by York downtown Toronto. Mm-hmm. Where it's expected there's going to be an enormous rebrand of that team, perhaps including location. We'll be there, and we'll talk about it on Friday or our following podcast, whenever that is. That's interesting. I want to get Jimmy's thoughts on that when it finally comes to fruition, having been an OG of the CPL with the York franchise originally. But that's 8 years ago, Jimmy. When did it start for you? Where did the conversation start with York? 10?
About that, yeah.
Jesus.
Was it 10?
Your name probably, is right? Jimmy.
I bet it is. Yeah. Wow. Okay. Thankfully, we're almost out of time, so we don't need to talk about Liverpool, Nottingham Forest.
Oh, yeah.
Or Man City, Newcastle.
Oh, that's quiet that day, didn't it?
Yeah. It's kind of being derailed right now. Very quickly, I mean, be it Liverpool, be it any other, Leafs, you know, these teams that were expected to be decent teams, and when they go off the rails the way they have, like, I'm sure you guys have been in similar situations. What happens in the room? Are the cliques formed? Are the tensions? Do you get together? Like, I mean, I can imagine it's not a pleasant place to go for a training day. Like, this time last year, Liverpool's winning every single game. That's fun. You go in there, everyone's great. This time around, you're in 11th place. You've lost, is it 6 or 7 games, Craig? Training can't be much fun, right?
Yeah, it's not the same showing up at the training ground when you're shit in the bed. It really isn't. Fun, is it? Yeah.
When there's ants on a log.
Yeah.
And there it is.
I mean, I've never been in a position where you win the league up, you know, the Premier League, that is, and then you drop off. But it doesn't matter. The expectations are incredibly high for Liverpool, and where they are now is a disappointment. So as far as the league goes, it'd be interesting to see what they do, because, I mean, they're not winning the title. I mean, that's not happening. Not the league title. So they got other fish to fry.
Only 3 points out of Champions League spots. It's crazy, isn't it? There's a lot of teams between them, though. Mm-hmm. Wow, what a disaster.
Well, all of a sudden, the Arnie Slot conversation starts, right? I saw a couple of those. Hey, maybe we got to get rid of that guy. He hasn't done anything for us.
You know what?
What are you talking about? It's
there's
crazy.
So much to this season, though. You know, coming off a championship, right? And last week, Andy Robertson, you heard him talk post-Scotland win about Diogo Jota. Mm-hmm. And like, he's still feeling it. And I'm not making excuses at all. I don't know. But it has to have an effect on the team when such a popular member dies so tragically in the off season. Mm-hmm. You know, I think it's very easy to say, oh, well, just get on with it. You paid lots of money. You know, it's been months now.
Mm.
Craig, surely there's got to be more to it than just that.
Yeah, I'm sure there is. I'm sure there is. Yeah.
But no one's going to use that as an excuse, nor should they. They should be playing better than they are, for sure. Other way, elsewhere in Europe, Promise David scored. Second goal in a week, having scored for Canada. Tani Oluwaseyi, little back heel on the line. Lovely goal. Tejon is sitting the ball in. Both of them coming off the bench. John David, 2 minutes for Juventus. Yeah. That's all. A lot of players on the bench, though. It's kind of weird, though, right, when you come out on international break. You shouldn't read too much into those games. There's some odd results. Look at Newcastle beating Man City in a crazy game. And then Pep had an altercation with the cameraman.
I saw
hear about this? And he apologized afterwards, saying, I'm ashamed of myself. The cameraman, you haven't won championships, maybe, all of you, but you've been in some pretty shit teams. Let me ask you, when the camera's in your face after a match, after a bad loss, you gotta be like, it's gotta be a frustrating Jimmy, right? In those bad TFC years, when someone's got a camera stuck in your face and you're trying to get off the pitch, did you feel like just swiping it aside and telling you to F off?
Yeah.
Yes,
you did. You'd be like, get this out of my face. It was terrible.
I remember we were playing in Honduras and we were 2-0 up and referee was feeling for his life, I think, and they were pelting the linesman and all hell was breaking loose. And at the end of the game, we draw 2-2, probably cost us. Well, it definitely did cost us because we would have needed only a draw against Mexico in the last game of qualifying. And they're doing, this guy was doing this interview, this Spanish guy from Honduras. I don't know who he was talking to, one of the players. And I saw the wire for that. I was going down the stairs, down the tunnel, and I saw the wire.
Oh, no.
I picked up the wire, and I just fucking pulled as hard as I could. And the guy's like, oh, they're doing the interview. And it just got flying out of his hand. And it came down the stairs.
That is amazing. Just the Craig Forrest legend in Canadian soccer grows with that story. Yeah, that is going to be made into a social media clip. Okay. Oh,
The red mist came over me in Central America more than once.
Accompanied by your red crop top too.
Yeah.
Which is actually a full shirt, I know, but I like to think of it as your red crop top.
right along the nipples.
Yeah, that's a great way to end the show.
That was a hella good show.
Is it a Gwen Stefani reference?
Yes. Song okay. called Hella Good.
Oh, that was it? Okay, sorry. That good, nice. Better than Wongers, who forced it into the show. Now, once it's in the show, you can revert back to the other lines and enjoy it. It's great. But when you cram it into a show where it doesn't really fit.
I know.
Like Wonga. That's the problem with the gag. But I appreciate the effort, Wonga. I do. All right, it's Free Prime. Like us and subscribe to us and leave us comments, negative or positive, but mainly positive. But mm-hmm. we'll more than likely read the negative ones more so than the positive ones. So take that as you will.
Don't be afraid tomorrow. To holler back.
just being there.
No doubt.
Dubs, do you say there's a broadcast this week? There's a broadcast tomorrow, right?
Oh, no. I don't think so.
I read that.
No.
I didn't read that.
No, okay. You didn't read that.
Okay, I'm making things up.
Hey, she's just a girl.
But there will be other footy primes this week getting set for Vancouver against the winner of tonight's Minnesota-San Diego game. So until then, thanks so much and cheers for listening. Bye.
Make sure to subscribe to Footy Prime wherever you get your podcasts and follow us on Twitter at @footy_prime and on Instagram at @footyprimeig and visit wearefootyprime.com and sign up for our newsletter.